Welcome back to How to Be Queer. This is Chris.
This is Sam.
And this is Kellum. And today we are talking to Chris about all things edumacation.
Kellum.
Hi.
Tell us some news.
Yeah.
Okay, news. So as our listeners and you two lovely humans know, I started a new corporate job a few months ago. And today I gave my very first presentation on pronouns in the workplace.
Yay!
You talked about that last time. That's so exciting.
Mm-hmm. And it went pretty good.
That's fantastic.
And I actually have been asked to offer office hours once a month for the next 3 months. They want me to go over like adding pronouns to bio and like how to have conversations with like clients. So it's pretty freaking cool.
That is so exciting.
Oh my god, office hours. We're like a TA.
I'm obsessed.
I'm so excited about this.
That is so exciting.
Out here educating literally everybody.
It's really interesting because like we have employee resource groups and I'm part of like the LGBT one as well. But the responsibility of those ERGs is to focus on like the corporate big picture of, you know, how can we like, let's say, during Pride is when we're busiest, obviously, because our clients come to us and they're like, hey, we want to put out a post about Pride. How do we do it in a way that's like respectful and all of this? Whereas I am hoping that the work that I can potentially start doing is more of like a day-to-day integration of stuff. So
that's fun.
That's what I'm hoping for.
That's so cool. Just like the menial shit that like nobody wants to like massage out.
Yeah, no one wants to go through 7,000 HR documents and change all of the language to gender neutral terms, but like, I'll fucking do it.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. I would really love to
search through a document. Oh, I love that. Really That's exciting. Such good news. I loved it.
That's really good news. So proud of you.
Thanks, pals. Thank you. All right, hey, Sam.
No, but...
I want to hear from you, Chris. Sam, it's your turn. Let's go.
So Kellum, before you joined, I did just say that I am moving stores. There's a lot of other things going along with that, but we'll just wait for that for another time. Probably not on the podcast, but they're moving these stores, which is really exciting. So that's good for my development. I had a really good meeting with this new person that I'll be underneath and that I'll be with running the store, hopefully potentially by November, December, which will then get me on my feet enough to apply for my own store, which is really exciting. I'm nervous because I was like very transparent that I have a lot of growing that still needs to be done and development. And prior to recording, I realized, is that what this is leading up to? Am I going to put it on the podcast?
You can if you want. You don't have to.
If you want, no pressure.
You can just be like, I'm coming out as more queer.
That's essentially it. Yeah. Yeah.
I can cut that part out if you want to start again, but like it's up to you.
Authentic, baby, keep it in. Let's go. Yeah, that's essentially.
If people want to know the real us.
That's the truth of the matter. Here, I thought I fucking knew it all, as per usual. And Kellum and Chris can attest to this. I acted like a fucking know-it-all too when they met me at 19. But thank you for not. I was like, I know everything. I'm so set in my life. And then here we are. But yeah, I just realized a little bit more about myself and my sexuality. And it's kind of exciting, kind of nerve-wracking, still a lot to unpack, so I'm still kind of figuring that out. But I just think it's kind of cool because here I thought I knew it all, and I do not. Things are constantly evolving and changing, and I just think that that's pretty cool. But as per usual, as I've said in any of my coming out stories, everyone knew before me, so that was great.
When you were like, I am more queer, I'm like, yeah, I know. That's fine.
It's like she is an open book and it's a picture book. And she just can't read it. It's rough, but you know, we got there.
Yeah.
Apparently like 5 years too late, but it's, you know.
Never too late.
It's never too late. But love that you guys both just sat on the sidelines. Just like waiting for her to come to. And you know what's really funny? I can like every conversation I've had with Chris over the last like the podcast existing for the last like 2-3 years. I would like talk to Chris about things. And Chris would always be like, maybe that is just it, but maybe there's more. But that was like these little comments like, yeah, it could be that. Could be something else. And I was always like, what the fuck are they talking about? Like, what is it? Like, is it gender identity? Do they think, what's going on here? And I think it's a bit of both. I think you're still waiting for the second portion of this to come out. So we'll get there when we get there. Who knows? Like, aiming for the end of 2022 to have it all rationalized. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
you've got 94 days. That's plenty of time.
Oh, yeah. Ample time for self-discovery, especially working at a much slower store. I'll just be staring at the window at all the farm fields, thinking about it, watching the pipeline get built, I guess.
Yeah,
there's nothing gayer than farm fields.
Chris, your news.
My news is that I'm going this weekend to a Blue Jays game.
Okay.
And we've got like a booth or something. I don't even know. Like, what do you call them there? It's like some
She's
kind of
fancy. Maybe a box.
I know.
Yeah, Miss Girl's got a booth.
Yeah, we got a booth or something. So
It's a box.
We are gonna sit in a box.
You're in one
of the boxes at the Jays game?
Yeah, I don't know which box or where it is, but I know that it's there.
Just a side note here. When you're saying booth, I'm thinking that like you're going to be handing out pamphlets for something.
Oh no. Yeah. No.
I'm going to be queer. Check out how to be queer.
So what you mean to say is like, yeah, you're in one of the boxes at the game. Okay. That makes more sense. That is fancy.
Yeah. So just for clarification's sake, it's going to be,
a box. I was like, what are you like advocating for? Like what's going on at the Jays game? No.
Yeah.
No,
I'm not here to advocate for any kind of sport about anything or anything like that. I mean, you know, like gender and stuff. I can hand out pamphlets. Like, you know what? I'm going to make up a pamphlet and I'm going to talk about.
Just leave it on the seats when you leave. Pocket.
Yeah.
Slip it into people's bags.
Exactly. Just in case, you know? One never knows, and there's a lot of sports people there. Yeah.
I was going to say, we're going to manifest that for Pride 2023, How to Be Queer will be invited to the Jays Pride game.
Hilarious. And we can hand out pamphlets.
I will fly in.
Here. So yeah, I'm doing that this weekend on Saturday. I'm coming down to Toronto and going to the Blue Jays game. It's for my grandma and my aunt's birthday.
Cute.
So exciting. Yeah. So cute.
My grandma loves the Blue Jays. She loves the Blue Jays. So
I love that so much. Oh, Anne.
Yeah.
What an icon.
Absolutely. She's 100% an icon.
All right. Shall we get into it? Has the bell rung?
The bell has rung.
So Chris. Tell us what back to school is really like in 2022.
That's a good question. Back to school has been interesting. I've actually had a much better time than I have in the past 2 years. There's just this lightness that feels really nice. And everybody's just been lovely. All the kids are lovely. Like there's not really any like huge issues that are happening so far. I could be in my own little corner of the like world under a rock or something like that, but it just feels like the vibe, like the general just like vibe. Maybe it's just at my school, but the vibe, you know, it's pretty okay. We're having a good time. We're better than 2020 September. 2020 September, Christopher was not okay.
Was not a vibe.
No, that was not a vibe. I don't think anybody was having a vibe. I was like scared to be at school. Like it was not okay. So that wasn't okay. Back to school last year was like a little bit better, but still not great. Cause like even back to school last year, I don't think, when did we get the vaccines? No, we had the vaccine at that point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. At that point.
Mm-hmm. It was like booster season.
Yeah. Okay. So we had the vaccine. So I wasn't necessarily as scared, but we still hadn't gone back to normal. We were still trying to prevent like a lot of like infection and stuff like that. So it was like still like, half day, there were rotations. It was complicated. It confused everybody. There were no bells. It was all that kind of thing. So it was just confusing, but it's back to pre-pandemic schedule. Like everything, all of the restrictions are essentially gone. I feel like less burdened by the pandemic right now, which is nice, but I understand the privilege of being able to say that too. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that the students are living in the after the pandemic times in your classrooms?
That's a good question. I'm gonna say that like every single time, but that's a good question. I think that the students, yes, they are living post-pandemic, and I think that the biggest most obvious signs of living post-pandemic is that their social skills aren't what they kids would have at the levels that they're at.
I was gonna ask that.
Yeah, you have to kind of like push them even further to go out of their own way to be social with each other. They have formed their online communities and they're safe in those, and they don't necessarily have, cell phones are taken away kind of in class, and like, you know, it's hard to monitor though. So it's not like it's like completely, and like in my classes, if they use them, they use them. I'm trying to like get them to remember why not to, but that's a like battle and a half anyway. But regardless, they're on their phones most of the time, and so they have their communities on there, and so they don't really see the need to make communities outside of technology. So what I try to do is like make sure that my classes know each other and that they've formed like their own little community within it. Sometimes I it means that I'm not going to be able to get them to be quiet. But like, that's also nice because like, at least they like each other. They talk to each other. They're having a good time. But like, you just have to like help them to develop those social skills, which they haven't had practice in a while.
I saw like a post and it was this girl who was like, I was 14 when the pandemic started and I'm now 18. And I think like as adults, that time went by and things happened in our lives, things happened in our careers. And like, there were small shifts. But for me to imagine 14 is when I was 13, 14 going into high school. And then I graduated at 18. My birthday is early enough. That's like all 4 years of high school. Like, I guess for there's like three for them realistically, but yeah. Like that's 3 years of high school just like gone. And exactly. There's so much developing that happens within those years. Like if I look at who I was when I was like 13, 14 and the person I developed into and the social skills that I have now. Yeah. Like I could definitely attest that to being in that, in a school environment, in a social environment.
Yeah.
And it's just like those ones that got kind of lost in the flood of COVID and lost those years, what that will be like for them. But it is also nice to know that like as a teacher, the ones that are now entering these spaces, that you're making like an active effort to ensure that they're like, you know, gaining those social skills back. But I imagine it would be so difficult. Like I know how on my computer I was because Tumblr was popping at that time. And had the pandemic happened, I would probably be a completely different person.
Exactly.
I wonder, Chris, if you've seen the differences. I mean, obviously we were all in high school a while ago and cliques were a huge thing. And I mean, yeah. When I was in high school, we didn't have Snapchat, group chats, Instagram chats, any of that where we could form those us versus them mentalities online. Do you find that those online communities that you talked about where the students are feeling safe or were feeling safe, do you find that that has translated into the classroom where maybe some of the students didn't have that, you know, go-to group, or some of them did and they can't seem to break out of it?
With regard to I think it comes down to representation for some students. Like, for example, with like non-binary students, I think that the pandemic and finding their community online has made them feel like more sure of themselves and able to express themselves in a better, like more, you know, mature way that gets their point across because they've got the language for it. And so they're advocating for themselves, which is really, really nice. And I think that that is what's kind of translating, is like that the kids have just, I mean, some ways, this is a very optimistic view. I think there are some ways that it's not happening like this, but like, I think, because it's always, you know, both, but I think that in some ways it's helping to embolden the next generation to be like, we can make this better. Like there are ways to make this better. And if we advocate for ourselves and like stand up for our rights and like things like that, then we can, you know, keep pushing forward. And I'm seeing, I don't know if it's because of the community that I have at my school, but I'm seeing kind of a wave of like social justice stuff wash over us so that we can like, you know, make the school a better place for everyone. And a lot of kids are really into that. And I think that that's something that social media helps with. Like that was like the dawn of Tumblr was like, you know, finding community. Like that was what Tumblr was about. And so like, I think that that's kind of what has continued, is that sense of like, I have a place. Even if I don't have a place here, I have a place. Everything is okay, right? It's still, I mean, the other side of it is that there's a dark side always to social media. Like obviously social media can be a very dangerous place. The internet is wild, but I try to see the best in it, because the kids, as they grow up, will learn to navigate it as well. And as long as we're trying to help them in the best way that, like, most authentic way that we can to, like, get out of situations that they get into, then I hope that the positives outweigh the negatives.
I was gonna say, like, do you find that, like, in comparison to, like, when you were in high school, like, do you find that, like, people are, especially the younger ones, like, a lot more socially aware? Like, how, what's, like, the difference between, like, your experience in comparison to, like, what you're seeing students experiencing now?
I should say that I was raised in a Catholic system, but it was a fairly progressive, which to me, it's wild. Like, my elementary school, it was not very progressive. It really wasn't. But my high school, it kind of was. Like, there were some things that, looking back, I was like, oh, okay, actually, you know what, that's fine. So, like, you know, there was one kid who was beaten up for being trans at the school, and we didn't know that they were trans at the time, but that was essentially what we were doing, was, like, noticing that they were trans. Mm-hmm. And then on the announcements, the, like, principal read us the riot act, like, over the announcements for, like, a good 15 minutes, saying, like, this is not how you treat people. And so, like, it was really nice to see that. When I was growing up, there, my valedictorian was gay. Like, there were certain things that were kind of accepted. But with diversity, I would say that it was fairly racist. I would say that it was, like, you know, it's still not even close. Like, that person would never have had the language to say that they were trans. Like, I didn't know a trans people existed at that time. And so, like, you know, it took a long time to get to that place. But now I, in front of me, see kids talking about transphobia and, like, talking about, you know, the patriarchy. Like, literally my grade nines today were talking about how Taylor Swift sang about the patriarchy, because we started talking about uteruses and stuff like that. And, like, just talking about, like, why didn't we have as much information as we did prior to women getting into science? Because men weren't looking, they didn't care. And then they were like, well, Taylor Swift sings about the patriarchy. And, like, they started, like, talking about the patriarchy. And I was just like, yeah. And so they have the vocabulary that I just never would have had. And mm-hmm. that, I think, helps them to fight for what's right. And so I am seeing more people fight for what's right. I'm not necessarily seeing everybody do it. I think that that's one thing, is, like, the education doesn't seem to be disseminating out. It just seems to be in an echo chamber that nobody seems to be listening to, which is fine. It's starting to move, like, as we change like, structural things within the institutions. I think that's what's going to move things forward a little bit more, but that takes time. And so, you know, it's hard to see, but the thing is that I feel like I've talked for a long time, but there, like, when I was growing up, if a teacher had ever worn a dress that was, like, masculine presenting, it would not have been okay. But then in 2019, I wore a dress for Halloween. Yes. But I wore a dress and everything was fine. Like, there were kids that were like, oh my gosh, is that Jesus? Like, there were certain things that were, like, hilarious, but, like, they were still saying, like, they were accepting me for who I was. And that was great. And then I actually wore a dress on purpose outside of Halloween to school one day. And it was fine. Like, I got some weird looks, but that's expected and it's fine, you know. But just generally, I feel like that I'm so much safer to be who I am than I would have been even 5 years ago.
Please tell me you still wear that glittery purple skirt that you bought when we worked at the body shop together. You had the best outfits that year. Oh, you were, like, coming into your own. Yeah. And you were, like, branching out into, like, fashion, and the fits were just, like, on point. And I just hope you still have some of those glittery.
Oh, I have them. I have them. I certainly have them. I haven't worked up the courage to, like, wear stuff like that yet, because I wore, like, this, like, kind of, like, business casual professional type thing dress from RW and Company. that's kind of what I wore. And it's, like, army green, and it was a red one. It was like a burgundy one.
I think I've seen it. I think
you may have seen either one. Like, both of them. I think I got them, like, while I was working at Body Shop with you. So, yeah.
Or you just, like, sent them. I think it was in, like, our group chat with Melanie.
And oh, that,
like,
works too, yeah.
You're like, I was like, I did a haul. It was the two colors. And we were like, yes.
I'm wondering if you feel, as an educator, that some of the conversations that you felt you needed to have around social justice, diversity, acceptance of peers. I wonder if you feel like you don't need to have those anymore in your classroom because of all of the learning that society and your students have been doing during the pandemic.
No, it's always mandatory. It's always going to be, I think, in high school. I'm hoping that eventually it becomes not mandatory for teachers because it's just something that we already know. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like it's something that everybody right now needs. I'm hoping that adults won't need it in the future. Like I think that teens will always need it. Generally, they have better vocabulary for it. They've built better understandings of it and they have better prior knowledge before they come in about social justice, but it takes a lot of understanding and there's not enough in high school for it to be effective yet to fully have. Yeah, no, I would say no. we definitely have to keep going. Like we have to keep educating. I feel like even in some of my like math classes, there will be, kids who are gossiping or like doing something or like, you know, saying things that I'm like, oh, that's like slightly microaggressive. I don't know exactly how to address this without talking about diversity directly. And so what we need to do is have a whole lesson on this stuff. There was one person, for example, in one of my classes who got dead named and was very upset and came to me and was like, I can't handle this anymore. I can't be dead named all the time. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about like workplace diversity and respecting gender and respecting like these are the human rights things that like exist in Canada. And this is why you can't say the things that you're saying. Like we kind of like, I feel like I run into this more often than a lot of people think probably is going on in schools. Like I think a lot of people think that teenagers just know exactly what's going on. And I mean, yes, but also I think the ones that are met with oppression know what's going on a little bit better than the ones that are not meeting oppression. And the ones that only meet a little bit of oppression aren't necessarily seeing it either. So like gay men versus trans individuals, gay men aren't, but like the GSA, for example, has evolved to become something that is more about gender than it is about sexuality, because people's sexuality, they don't need necessarily a safe space for it as much. Like this is obviously, it's a general rule. It's not really like exactly 100%. Like we've only got trans people in our thing, but like it's mostly like just an observation that like gender is a lot more controversial right now than sexuality is, which is very interesting.
So you were saying that like you brought forth like this discussion in like human rights and like, you know, like what Canada does and doesn't allow. So how do you bring that forward in some of your lesson plans when you are teaching like a math curriculum? Like how, just as on a personal note, if that is okay to ask, I don't know where the
line is. No, it's totally fine.
I know how we've had discussions in the past when you were doing like food and nutrition and how you integrated culture and diversity behind that. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like if I would have taken food and nutrition if I had had a teacher like that. But I'm just wondering, like when you're doing things like English, again, you can easily bring that forward. Yep. But in something like math or sometimes in science, like how are you bringing forth like, and how can you bring forth that conversation and discussion into the curriculum?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. I think that this is a lot of math teachers like quandary because they kind of are in this place where they're like, well, actually kind of math doesn't need to change. Like there's not really anything that I need to incorporate. Like, you know, that's kind of what math teachers think because like it's math. And so there's like, it's black and white. There's not really. And then to that, I would say there are actually things that you could incorporate. Like for example, zero was not invented by white people. So why don't we talk about that? It's essentially like two truths can be contradictory, but can also exist at the same time. And okay. That's something that we have come to understand about like understanding truth is that there could be both things, both are true. And it doesn't change the fact that we need to like grapple with it and, you know, be human about it. And that exists in math too, you know, and there are multiple ways to get to the same answer in a lot of cases. And so like you can actually just talking about the math itself can help you to make it equitable. But I mean, other than that, like if my math class, I noticed that they are being like
slightly racist, slightly homophobic, slightly like whatever, if they are being like that, I don't care what the curriculum says. I do. Don't quote me on that. I am a teacher and I follow the curriculum. However, I'm also going to be like, all our schools, it's mandatory for us to have safe schools. And this classroom right now is not safe. And so what I need to do is make sure that this classroom is a safe space. And the only way to do that is to address what's going on. And I feel like anybody with a social justice lens, a critical social justice lens, will like look at a space and be like, you know, that's not okay. That's not okay. That's not okay. I actually do have to address this. Whereas some people will be like, like, it's kind of not okay, but like, you could argue that it is, you know, nothing, you know? And so they just kind of like let it slide. And that's the things that kids notice. And that's what's the hidden curriculum, right? Like the hidden curriculum is the stuff that teachers don't say, but they do. And you don't, like, you're advocating for it, even though you're not necessarily aware that you're advocating for it. Like if someone behind me says, oh, that's so gay, and I don't address it, that tells the kids it's okay to say that, you know? And so
Hillary Duff told us it was.
Amen.
True. I mean, what if you walked around all the time saying, oh my gosh, that looks so much like girl wearing a skirt as a top.
Just direct quotes from that video. I love it. I love it so much. It's weird to think, like, I even have this issue because I have a lot of 15, 16-year-old kids working in my environment. And like some of them are so socially aware. And I'm like, okay, great. Because let's be honest, where I work, pretty queer environment. Mm-hmm. and while a lot of them are adults and it's not like the focal point, and we're not like outwardly only always talking about it, I think some of them I can tell are just like super socially aware. And then, you know, I have this one kid that I talk to. And he's a bit younger and he had said something and I was like, why do you think that's appropriate to say? Like, was that what you just said? And he was like, oh, it's like, it's fine. And I realized that for him, as you said earlier, Chris, someone who doesn't face a lot of oppression, you know, you have to address it. A, that's like literally my job. Like I can't have that said in my workplace.
Yeah.
Because I do work for an inclusive company. I work with a lot of like diverse individuals. But I was like so shocked because I was like, oh, every other like teenager I've worked with has just been like so forward thinking and so aware. And we're having these like conversations that like I sure as shit would not have had at that age.
There's the students who say it just to see if you're going to react.
Mm-hmm. And I think like he was definitely one of those. And I think like he thought that I would just like, cause I do joke around and thought like, I'd be like, oh, haha, it's a joke. And I was like, it's not funny. Like I was like, it's not funny mm-hmm. at all. And we don't say that here and you shouldn't be saying it anywhere else. And this is why. So.
Yeah. That's good for you.
Trying, yeah, you know, job. Trying. It's hard because I think I am just so laid back that it's easy for people. I get told a lot of things. A lot of things are said all the time. And it's trying to navigate that fine line where it's like, I want to be someone that you can seek guidance from, but I also, at the end of the day, I'm your boss. And, there's things that you shouldn't be doing and yeah. I'm going to hold you accountable for those things.
Well, that's kind of the line that I walk with my students because I do want them to feel welcome and safe and all that kind of thing. But I also mm-hmm. need them to remember that like I am kind of an authority figure and I will need to like if there's something going on and you're like absolutely out of control, there's no way that you should be saying the things that you're saying, like you mm-hmm. need to get out kind of thing, or like we need to talk about it and this is why you're not going to say it, and if you are going to say it, you're going to not be in this classroom, like mm-hmm. those types of things, you know.
And it's interesting because like, oh sorry Kellen.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say like at one point there was a trans person in our district. I don't know if I'm allowed to put this in there, but, and they were just having difficulty at the store that they were working at. So they relocated to my store. And so at that point they were relaunching like pronoun pins and no one's required to wear them, but if you want to, that's great. And so I was really stoked to get them. I was like, love me a good pronoun pin. So I wrote, but like we have a predominantly woman identifying team. So the she, her ones went real quick. So I was like, fuck it. I'll wear the ask me my pronoun one. Because I feel like it opens up a good conversation. And then also like when I was doing like onboarding and stuff like that, you know, going into these meetings and saying like what my pronouns are to open that. And like just doing those little things equate to something so much bigger. And then when they left, because they went to college or they're in university now and they went to the island to go to university, I got this, they wrote this letter to the store in their resignation letter. And it was just thanking our store for being so accepting. And this is a means a great deal, because the thing is, like, where I live is a very religious space. A lot of the people working in my stores all go to church Sundays. All very religious, religious people, like, through and through. And no one misgendered. No one batted an eye when we came in and were like, you probably know this partner, you probably worked with them in another store, they're coming to our store, like, just a reminder, these are their pronouns, blah 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 blah. And like, they thanked us and the team for like making them feel so accepted and like having a safe space to work in, and, you know, being there for them when they didn't feel safe within the company that we worked for. So I don't know, I just think like these little conversations and these little accountabilities make much more of an impact than I think we realize. And like, you're right when you're saying like ignoring them and just like chalking it off and like having a good laugh or whatever, it's like you're acknowledging that what they said is okay and it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah. I coached different sports, and I was like a camp counselor, and believe it or not, I was also a Sunday school teacher. And that was always the hardest line for me, of like, I need you to know that I'm here for you if you need me. But also, if you step out of line, you're going to hear about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because, so as I mentioned, I did this presentation today and I'm still relatively new. It's also like KPI and goal season at my workplace. And so I'm building out these goals. And so I asked for feedback from some of the leaders who were present. And the biggest thing, the biggest note of feedback that I've received so far, I mean, it was only 5 hours ago, so I'm sure I'll get more, was about my tone and how the seriousness of the conversation required a serious tone, and how I was able to deliver that, even though I'm working with people quite senior to me. I didn't come into the company as like the most junior person, but I am junior comparatively. And so I wonder, like, Chris, you, Sam and I have both worked with you, and in most cases, I mean, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have both also answered to you as like a manager or a boss in some sort of capacity. So I find it interesting when people are able to toe that line so perfectly. And I know in an educational system, you have to. I have so much respect and awe for teachers who can do it. My mom does a really good job of it as a guidance counselor, and I don't know how you do it, but I'm wondering if you can give us some tips,
please,
if there's anyone listening who and I mean, like, and for Sam and myself too. Sam's gonna be moving to a new store where, like, Sam, you're gonna have to lay down the law. Maybe
it's been hard time. I keep getting chastised a little bit because I'm just so close with the team. And it's like, I don't see that as a bad thing, but it does. In the beginning, it was really hard to like give disciplinary action and then have it taken seriously. Anyway, but yes, I would love the answer to this question. And
I mean, to be honest, Sam, the things that you're doing are exactly what you're supposed to do. Like, you are like having a good time with the people that you work with and enjoying yourself and like talking to them, you know, commiserating if you need to, or like, you know, talking to each other and forming a community. Like, you should be a community. You should be a community. Like, why wouldn't you be? You have to work together. Humans are not good in isolation, so make sure that they know that it's a community. The fact that, you know, the person in the testimonial attested to the fact that you made it a safe space, you know, and it could be a collective like decision that you made it a safe space kind of thing. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. And I think that that's exactly what it is. It's just like, when the time comes, you just kind of have to just know that it's for the best and it's for the betterment of the team, rather than like thinking of like, the interaction that you're going to have and how awkward it is and like all those types of things. It's like, you know, if I don't address this little thing right now, if I don't address this issue, then what's going to happen is it's going to spiral into something that creates a space or a community that is a little bit
I won't say poisoned, but like it just starts to like break down the bonds, because you kind of like let one thing go and then it starts to lead to another thing, and then mm-hmm. like it leads into this situation where people don't feel like they can be with each other, and humans are messy, and there's going to be fighting. Like, that's not necessarily not going to happen, but just knowing that you've got certain values in the back of your mind, you've got certain rules that just can't be broken. There are some that you'll let go and be like, okay, well, like, for example, in my class, like, I'll be like, okay, everybody in here, I know that it's like weird, but what I'm going to say is that you're allowed to swear in here. I don't want to hear it all the time, but you're allowed to swear in here. The things I don't want to hear are going to be hate speech. And we're going to talk about the difference between helpful and harmful speech. We'll talk about that. And then what we would do is like, if someone says something, then you can be like, well, is that helpful? Like, is that even helping anything that we're trying to do right now? And usually they'll be like, well, no. Like, oh, I was just trying to be funny. Well, it wasn't. So is it helping? Mm-hmm. You know, like, it landed flat. So what are we going to do now? And you just kind of keep moving forward. But I think that the other thing too is that you just have to keep growing. Like, I know that I'm not done growing, and I know I'm not perfect at it. And I know that I, you know, mess up a lot of the time. Even like back at David's Tea, I was definitely not perfect at it. And I know that you saw growth in me, like, even.
Oh, immense growth.
Right. Like, at the beginning, I was like micromanaging you and telling you exactly what to do and being like, these are the rules. And you're like, I know the rules. I'm not stupid. Like,
you and I would butt heads so bad. Like, I just remember Jillian, like, literally seeing us like yelling at each other, because you were just like, I was like, get off my ass. And you were like, I'm just telling you what my job requires me to tell you. And I was like, I have closed with you the entire time I've worked with this fucking company. Like, what the fuck are you doing right now?
Yeah. No, exactly.
But I know that, like, we finally had like a point where we discussed it, and I was like, this is why it bothers me. Like, this is where it's coming from. It's like, A, I have an issue with authority, which we are all very aware of, but also it comes from the fact that it's like, thanks, God. That's why I'm the boss. Okay. I can't be beneath anyone, but, we had this talk where I was like, I look up to you and I'm your friend outside of this place. So when you're telling me these things, it makes me feel like you think I just don't know how to do them. And it makes me feel like I'm not good enough, and I don't want you to see me in that way. And you were like, no, this is like the feedback that I need. But it's like a two-way street. Like, I think
that's teaching, yes, like, exactly.
It's like, I've really learned that at this job, like, learning to put your foot down and advocate for yourself. And it can be really uncomfortable. And it's like what I have been aiming for in the workplace as well. I work with so many young people. My last job, I worked with so many young people, and they would feel guilty saying no to me. And I was like, you're actually like screwing me over more by not just saying no off the hop. Just, I need you to be honest, and you need to learn how to advocate for yourself in these workplaces, or you will be walked all over.
Yes.
And so it, teaching them young with that too, and realizing by like teaching people how to advocate for themselves, how to stand their ground, how to just say no, translates into so many other aspects of their life. But it's not always an easy conversation, and sometimes they do take it too far, and it's like, okay, where's the middle ground here? And everything's not black and white. It's like a solid gray. Can we figure this out together? But I don't know. I would say, like, I've learned a lot from you, Chris, and Callum too. Like, the two of you, I don't know. You just helped me a lot in my journey and stuff like that. But like, you've had such an immense amount of growth, Chris, like, in comparison to like when you did start off. Yeah, you were very direct. And I know you in a teacher environment would be vastly different than obviously a tea shop, but, you know, I just think, like, I don't know, having these open-ended conversations and like teaching the younger generation to just kind of acknowledging what you said was helpful and what's harmful. And then, you know, but still also getting them to, you know, just stand up for themselves too.
Yeah. You know what the other thing
is? How are you to know like what's wrong if they're not telling you as well, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Leadership is about people. Like, everything is about people. It's all about people. Like, this is, we're talking about people. It's not like, you know, you can remove the person and be like, this is how you lead. It's like, no, you're leading people, and people have personalities. And so, like, even just the fact that like my management style at the time was just one type of management style, and it didn't mesh with your personality, right? And so because it didn't necessarily mesh with your personality and who you are as a person, I had to adjust it. And that's the thing, is that like, I've always kind of like been fairly okay with like growth and change and things like that, and I will adapt, and like if I need to, I don't want to hurt people. So if I start hurting people, if I'm like aggravating people, I don't want to continue doing that. And so I will take the feedback and be like, okay, well then I'll change. And so like, in order to make it so that we can come to a place where we can work together. And I feel like in that way, I'm fairly like laid back and easygoing. And I don't know that everyone would have an easy time like working with all types of personalities. And I certainly don't. There are people that I haven't gotten along with in the past. And I don't, there are some times that I'm just like, I don't know that I am going to be like the leader that you need. That's okay. Right.
But I feel like that is like the biggest sign of maturity in leadership.
Oh,
though.
Yeah. It is
like to know that your leadership style either doesn't work or isn't going to work. Like no matter how much we both work at this, we're going to keep butting heads. I loved school in theory, because I wanted to be that really, really smart academic kid. And I am, but traditional school was so hard for me. And I butted heads with so many teachers. Mm-hmm. And I remember finally one of them getting through to me and saying, you know, if the way that I'm explaining something doesn't work, you know the solution. So you have to problem solve how we're going to get there. Did it cause a lot more emotional distress for me in my teenage years than I should have been dealing with? Yes. But I'm a fucking great problem solver now.
Yeah.
And Chris, I think one of the biggest things, I echo everything what Sam said. I think your growth as a leader for both of us, definitely we can see it. But I think one of the biggest things is seeing the way you led at David's when I first got there. Mm-hmm. And then when I left, and it was like night and day.
It was.
Albeit we also had like a huge shift in the way that what the team looked like.
Oh yeah.
But it also like that team went through some shit together.
That did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like when you first started, I think you were like, this fucking store needs a facelift, like it needs a redo. And so you went in like blazing, like ready to go, like ready to flip it. And then I think like through that you realize, well, I can't do that because there's multiple people here and some people are stuck in their ways and some aren't, and you know. And I think like you adapted to that, and then you also kind of realized that you're like, okay, I have a vision, but I need to share that vision as well. I think like past Chris that I knew, you were like, I'm the only one who could do it, so I'm gonna do it. And it was like, and then I think like in that time, like you learned, you're like, oh wait, no, this is if I share this vision, we'll all be on the same page and I can all work towards this like active goal. Do I think that all of us leaving David Steve was like the best fucking thing we could have done ever? 100%. But I will still like attest like a lot of like my personal growth and like professional growth stemmed from working there. And hands down, if anyone ever asked me what my favorite job was, I still say David Steve, despite what a clusterfuck those years were.
I would still say David Steve.
Yeah. I'm like trying to make my new job like into that space where I'm like, oh my gosh, I can get all this knowledge about like coffee and stuff. And I'm like, just doesn't hit the same, you know?
It doesn't. I don't know why, but like, you're right.
It just like...
Well, the reason why is because caffeine in tea and caffeine in coffee disseminates in your body differently. I have one final question.
Okay.
In your time since Teachers College, you have taught a plethora of classes, both in and outside of the classroom.
Yes.
You have instilled knowledge in many a youngster. And so I am wondering, for the soon-to-be teachers that are graduating in the spring, do you have any advice as to how to be the best and brightest for the best and brightest of the future?
Just live your truth. And I would say follow what you're curious about. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't pan out, because if it doesn't pan out, that's fine. You learned something about yourself. I have been through many different careers, even in between Teachers College and actually being in this career that I'm in teaching. I taught, but then I also worked at David's Tea. I was a manager. I worked in retail. I also went to vet tech. I tried that. I was curious about all these things. I was also curious in university, where I learned about a whole bunch of different things. Now I've got so many teachables because I was curious about things. I just followed my curiosity, and eventually it led me to where I am. And I'm happy. I'm in a place where I feel like I'm good. So like, I think that following your curiosity is going to be what's going to help. Practical advice would be treat everybody with kindness, to be honest, because when you're in a school and you're treating everybody with kindness and you're warm and you're bright, people will love it. Because everybody's just kind of tired from the day to day, and it just helps to have like a positive outlook. And I think it'll take you far. Positivity and curiosity.